So I want to tell you a story that's one of the more unflattering points in my life, which is a pretty high bar, if I'm really honest, because I have a lot of unflattering moments in my life, I feel like. When I was 22, I worked at a church in Northwest Indiana, just outside of Chicago, called Suncrest Christian Church. And one of the things that they did every year that I absolutely loved being a part of was that our elders, kind of the people who are the, if you want to think of it this way, like the spiritual board of directors for our church, every year they would invite each of our pastors and ministry staff members, kind of one at a time, to come in at some point during the year to eat dinner with the elders, and they'd have a meeting where they'd ask us a bunch of questions and pray for us at the end of it. And that sounds probably kind of intimidating. I remember the first time they approached me with this idea. I was like, I don't really know if I want to do that or not. That seems kind of scary. And they're like, well, you work here, so you have to. So I kind of ended up doing that anyway. And it ended up becoming one of my favorite things to do every year. It was just such an encouraging and helpful meeting. Anyway, at one of these particular meetings, we were meeting at the home of a guy named Bill Davie. And Bill, at the end of the conversation, kind of directed a question at me. And it was a very heartfelt, kind of pastoral, shepherding kind of question. He said, Wes, can you kind of talk about, hey, how's your spiritual life going? How are you doing spiritually? It was an innocent enough question, right? Seems like a reasonable question that any of us would ask in kind of a setting like that. And my response to Bill was essentially, it should have been, Bill, it's going terribly. Actually, I'm doing a terrible job at this whole following Jesus kind of thing. If you look at my life, it is weak and passive and it's thrown around. It's not accomplishing anything. And it's honestly kind of shameful because I'm not just like any person trying to follow Jesus. Like, I'm a person who's in charge of trying to help other people follow Jesus. I'm doing a really cruddy job at that right now. But instead, I responded with, it's fine. I lied, essentially, is what I did, which is really good. And I remember as I kind of told that little white lie, apparently they bought it, which is probably the biggest miracle of all, because I'm like the worst liar in the world. I've never won a poker game in my entire life. And they bought it and they prayed for me. And I remember walking out to my car and I was getting ready to make the 20-minute drive home. As I got in my car, I was feeling a number of different emotions in that moment. Maybe you've kind of felt similarly sometimes. I felt angry. I felt disappointed. I felt ashamed and embarrassed, right? Like, here are these people who care about me, who are real, like, kind of faith heroes to me. And I've basically, like, kind of outright lied to them. I feel embarrassed about the fact that, like, I'm a pastor, so it's, like, literally my job to help people connect to God. And here I am not doing anything to try and connect to God, right? Really, really good job right there, Wes. Excellent, excellent work. And I knew that I had no one to blame but myself. I knew that I was the reason I was in this pickle, right? It wasn't anything that God had done. It was my lack of action. It was my lack of doing anything that had kind of gotten in the way. And I looked at my life and I saw the wreckage was kind of around me. I saw how easily it just seemed like the smallest things got under my skin and bothered me and moved me different places and just all kinds of stuff I wasn't proud of. And I wouldn't have identified it in that moment, but as I made that 20-minute drive home in that car, something very holy happened. I was making the decision to become spiritually strong. For each and every one of us, we all face these moments sometimes in our lives where we get angry, we get frustrated, we're afraid, we're sad. And sometimes we look at those as really bad things. Sometimes those can be the catalyst for something amazing happening in our lives. Those can be the catalyst for an incredible, wonderful decision. And I would tell you that the decision I made in that car over that 20-minute ride home, next to making the decision to be baptized and follow Jesus, and next to becoming the husband to Brittany, was the most transformative decision I have made in the course of my life. Because I sincerely believe the decision for us to become spiritually strong has the power to change and affect everything. Spiritual strength is the thing that guides us through the lows and the difficult times of life. Spiritual strength is the thing that gives you a backbone when your marriage or your relationship is on the skids. Spiritual strength is the thing that allows you to respond to situations that would make other people stressed and worried and freak out with dignity and grace and class. Spiritual strength is the thing, teachers in the room today, it's the thing that allows you to deal really graciously with that kid who's working the last cell of the last nerve that you didn't even know you had in your body at some point until they kind of went there at some point in the year. Spiritual strength is the guide that brings us through the time when we sit in the doctor's office and we get news that we don't want to hear. Right? Spiritual strength is the thing that emboldens us. It gives us a foundation. It gives us something that we can hang on to, a relationship with God that sees us through the highs and through the lows of life without letting it get to us. I can tell you, I have a long way to go in this journey, but I can tell you that decision I made in that car on the way home 8 years ago is a decision that was a turning point in my life. Because I can tell you what my life looked like with kind of semi-spiritual strength, faux strength, and what it looks like with having built and worked on building some strength. And I would take the latter every single time. It is that important. And so over the next 5 weeks, we're going to go on a journey to kind of help us become spiritually strong. Now, I think whenever we talk about strength, there's a couple really important things that are worth noting for us, okay? So thing number one that's worth us noting is that being strong requires us to embrace discipline, okay? Being strong requires for us to embrace discipline. Now, we don't like discipline. Discipline is the reason of why we never usually kind of make it to the goals that we have for ourselves. Discipline is kind of the reason why we sometimes falter and struggle and fall short of where we hope to be, because discipline is the process of me submitting myself to habits and practices and behaviors that don't feel good right now, but ultimately get me where I really want to go. I came across this quote from a guy named Clay Scroggins. He's a pastor. He said it. I heard him say it last week. And when I heard him say this, it made me laugh out loud in my car because I was like, yeah, that is so true. He says, we like to do the right thing, but only when it feels right for us. And I thought, man, that is really true about our lives, right? That we all know what the right thing to do is, but generally, I'm only moved to do the right thing when it feels right to me, when it feels easy, when it feels simple, when it feels like it's somehow going to help me out. And spiritual strength, and specifically embracing discipline as a part of that, means that sometimes in my journey, I'm going to have to submit to something that's right for me that may not feel right for me at the time if I want to get to my end destination. Second thing worth noting is that being strong means I build strength before I actually need it, okay? Being strong means I build strength before I actually need it. I watched a show as a kid. I don't know if anyone ever saw this or not. Is a show called Rescue 911. Does anyone remember this show? William, okay, yeah, got some fans. Excellent. William Shatner, I think, hosted it, which is, you know, just another thing to add to his wonderful resume. And William Shatner would, like, walk through these crazy situations that people would do as they were, doing these crazy kind of 911 calls and stuff. And I will never forget, as a kid, watching this episode where a kid had gotten pinned under the front wheel of a car. And a person like went outside and was able to lift the car up, and someone was able to get the kid out from underneath the car. And I've thought about that story for this sermon a couple times this week. And every single time I thought, man, it is a good thing for that kid I wasn't there, because they would be screwed if I was there, right? Because I would have no way to be able to help them out. It wouldn't matter how much I desired, how available I was. I wouldn't be able to sleep with myself at night knowing that I didn't do everything to try and save this kid. But the problem is, it doesn't really matter how much I desire to do something. What matters is my ability to do it. And what's true about you and what's true about me is I can't bring something out of me that doesn't already reside within me, right? And what that means in regards to spiritual strength is if I want to have spiritual strength in my life, it requires that I do the stuff to build it before I actually need it. Because trying to, you know, just bring something out of you because you can't, right? It's like saying, hey, I'm going to start a weightlifting regimen. So can someone pull their Crown Vic over here and I'm just going to do a couple like bench squats kind of thing, right? That's not going to work that way, right? You have to work up to that. You have to work on some stuff before to build your musculature, to build your body, to get ready for that stuff, because in the moment is not the time to develop strength. Before the moment is the time when we need to develop strength. Third thing to think about. Being spiritually strong requires strength in more than just one place. The thing that we do in church a lot of times is we like to pick and choose different habits and things that we're good at, and we assume that encompasses the full thing of what it means to be strong. Oh, I'm really spiritually strong. I know a lot of Bible verses. Oh, I'm spiritually strong. I serve. I help all the time. I'm spiritually strong. I go to church all the time. I even go to church. Well, I know the sermon's going to stink. And when we sing the songs I don't like, you know, hey, I'm part of a Sunday school group or a community group or a small group, a Bible study kind of thing. Hey, some of us in this room, we kind of say, hey, I'm spiritually strong. I care a lot about injustice in the world or hurt in the world. You know, I've helped a lot of old ladies across the street. You know, however you want to define that, okay? And the thing is, we always tend to define strength with the things that we're already naturally good at to begin with. And the problem is that being spiritually strong doesn't just mean I'm strong or good at one thing. It means I'm strong across a whole range of different things. being spiritually strong means I'm well-rounded. You see, in my life, I'm really good at like the cardio stuff, okay? So like this week, I ran 13 miles this week. I did it just so I could brag to you about it right now in service. But you're all like, wow, he looks a lot more fat than the person who runs 13 miles a week, I think. And so here's the thing. When it comes to like cardio health and like all that kind of stuff, I'll hop on the elliptical for 45 minutes, no problem. Yeah, I'll run 6 miles, whatever. Hey, that's fine. I can do that. But don't ask me to help you move because I am a weakling. Right? Like I have no like actual strength, right? Like I am such a weakling. My one goal this year is I want to be able to do a chin up. I just want to be able to do one chin up. And you don't know how embarrassing it was when like you had to use the assisted chin up machine. You might as well like set a hippo on that thing. Cause that's how much assistance I needed to be able to like pull my body over the bar as I got started. Okay. Like I'm just not very strong. And what that means is I might be strong in one area, but I'm not strong overall. And spiritual strength means we won't just be strong in one area. We actually want to be overall spiritually strong. And so for the next 5 weeks, we're going on a journey to talk about how do we grow spiritually strong. And over the next 5 weeks, we're going to focus on 5 different habits or practices or however you want to think about those. We have like kind of a next step we're going to offer you as you walk out today as ways you can grow in that and take a next step with that, okay, to help you grow spiritually strong. But my goal is I want you to be able to be spiritually strong, to weather the storms of life, to be able to connect to God in a way that doesn't just change you, but actually changes other people through you, that impacts the world because of you and because of the spiritual strength that God has placed inside of you that you haven't just let sit on a shelf somewhere and you haven't just hoped and had some vague strategy to develop, but because you actually said, no, I'm going to do the things and the stuff that I need to do to grow to be spiritually strong. And so today we begin by talking about the first strong practice, which is that to be strong, you have to play strong. If you want to be strong, you need to play strong. When we think of spiritual habits and practices that help us grow strong, we probably don't think of play very often. No one said, hey, you know what? I want to be spiritually strong, so I'm going to like go to the beach. You know, like no one really thinks about that. Some of us think about that because our experience with the church is just like a no kind of place, right? When you grew up in the religious environment you grew up in or grew up around, someone could have just told you everything you needed to know about God by handing you a 3x5 card that just has no written in like big bold letters on it. Cause like, you know, it could have given you a magic 8-ball where just the answer to everything you asked was no, because that's kind of your experience. But the sad thing is that when we think about play, we should think about God. We should think about his work in our lives. We should think about specifically this idea that he has created you and I to enjoy enjoyment. Think about this. In Genesis chapter 2, we've got God kind of creating the world, creating everything that's in it, creating all this stuff. Some of you in here, you kind of are like, hey, that seems kind of weird, Wes. You know, like, hey, did he create in 6 days? Or was it 6 figurative days? Or, hey, I just think this is all kind of weird. If you could, just suspend your judgment and set that aside for a moment, because that's not the point I want to make to you here. When the Bible gives us its creation narrative, and it talks about God creating this world, it says, in 6 days, he created everything. And on the 7th day, Genesis 2 says, by the 7th day, God had finished from the work he'd been doing. And on the 7th day, he rested from his work. Now, when I heard this story as a little kid growing up in like Sunday school class or whatever, I was like, that seems kind of silly. That seems kind of dumb. You know, like I'm here like, you know, can you explain that? Why did God have to rest? He's like God. Isn't that the point? He doesn't need to rest. And it's not like, you know, no one can really do God's thing. Like if I call in sick, you know, at, I don't know, Burger King or something, right? Like you can find a replacement for that, but it's kind of hard to find a replacement for God, right? Like he's kind of God. You know, it's kind of a really big deal that he's there, right? And so I never understood that. And what I came to kind of see as I thought about this and allowed it to bug me for years and years and years of my life is that the reason God rested wasn't for him. It was to show something to each of us. It was to set in part a rhythm for us. Think about this. When the Bible talks about creation, it says on the 6th day, the day before God rested, he created human beings. He created you and me. And what's interesting is God creates us, and then what does he do? He doesn't give us a task to accomplish. He doesn't give us something to do. He says, here's what I want you guys to do. Nothing. I want you to rest. I want you to have a day to relax. I want you to have a day to play. which really bugs me as an American, right? Because we're taught, you work so you can rest. And God gets it all wrong. He says, no, 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 no. You should rest so you can work. All right, God's rhythm for us is to say, I want you to work from rest, not work to rest. There's a really big difference between those. This is so important to God that when he created his top 10 list, aka the 10 commandments, the longest commandment on that list is the command that says, I want you to keep a Sabbath day, a day to rest. Now, the ancient Israelites were like, you got to be kidding me. God, this is so strange. This is so weird. This is so odd. The ancient Israelites, as far as we can tell in history, are the first group of people to ever collectively observe a day off. And by the way, how much do you have to love a God who says, one of my commands for you is thou shalt take a day off? You know, like that's a really big deal, okay? And the reason that ancient Israel and no one else did this in the time was because when they took a day off from work, it wasn't just like, oh, maybe I'll miss an email. Oh, maybe I'll miss a phone call, right? Oh my gosh, are my kids going to be able to get where they need to go? You know? Like for them, it was literally stuff like, who's going to get our water? because like we can't just turn on a tap and get it, right? Who's going to like feed us our food? Because we can't just run down the street to Publix and grab something. And even if we have, you know, animals and stuff, like we have to actually like butcher the cow, right? Like we have to actually like literally prepare dinner from start to finish. You know? And even then when we do that, right, we don't have a nice little gas range we can turn on, right? We have to like literally build it ourselves right here. We have to start our own fire. We have to do our own thing. You know? The ancient Israelites would look at us and our reasons we give for why we can't take a rest and why we can't take a break. And they go, you gotta be kidding me.
Because you see, the whole issue that God is always trying to send his people thousands of years ago and us to today is that taking a Sabbath, committing to play, is always an action of trust. If you struggle to take a Sabbath, if you struggle to play, if you struggle to say, God, I'm going to cease from doing for a little while, I guarantee you, somewhere deep down inside there is this issue of, God, I'm not sure I trust you. God, I'm not sure that if I take a break, you're going to keep this world going. God, I'm not sure that I can rest from my work and still have everything I want or need or wish or desire. God, I like you. I'm a fan of you. But God, I just got to tell you, I'm not totally confident. I'm not sure I can trust you to provide. The Sabbath play is always an issue of trust. Now, of course, as religious leader types do, as people like me do, we found a way to turn this command of thou shalt take a day off, and we added a bunch of religiosity to it. We made it this crushing weight, this difficult command for ordinary, average people to keep. By the time of Jesus, there were probably hundreds of laws that the religious leaders of the day had managed to add to this command in order to define what was and wasn't work, what did and didn't violate the Sabbath, so much so that the ordinary average people of the day were like, this is just a load of junk. Like, I'm not even going to worry myself with this right now because I'm sure I'm probably daying off. I'm probably Sabbathing wrong somehow. And so I'm just done. I'm just not going to worry about this. And case in point of this whole thing, one time we're told this story about Jesus interacting with his disciples. And we're told this by Mark, who is a friend of Peter, one of Jesus' disciples. And Mark basically cozied up next to Peter one day and said, hey, bud, tell me what it was like to be around Jesus. And voila, we have the Gospel of Mark, this biography about Jesus' life and his teaching. And Mark writes for us that one day, Jesus and his disciples were walking through a grain field, and they were doing stuff, Jesus and his disciples kind of things, whatever that was. And as they're walking through the grain field, Jesus' disciples get hungry. And so they start to pick the little heads of grain off of these stalks. And the Pharisees ran in and said, no, Jesus, you and your disciples are not allowed to do that because what you're doing is essentially harvesting, and harvesting is a definite no-no on the Sabbath. You need to tell your disciples to stop. And Jesus turns to the Pharisees and he gives this great one-liner. He says, guys, you've got it all wrong. You've made a mistake here. Because you see, as Mark records for us, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. In other words, God created and programmed this idea of rest, this idea of play, this idea of Sabbath into our world, not so he could give people another arbitrary rule to follow, but because he wanted to make sure, he wanted to ensure that we would be able to be strong. This is something that God is doing for you. This is not just some arbitrary religious rule or some sort of devotion that he wants from you. Jesus, another point, he would turn and he would address all of these first century followers of God and people who were just burned out on all the religious laws and ordinances and commands and everything that they were being asked to do in order to be godly people in this world. And Jesus turns and he says these words have probably become very meaningful to a lot of us. He says, guys, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. My yoke is easy, and my burden is light. When Jesus talks about his yoke, this was an ancient way for rabbis and Jewish teachers to talk about their yoke was basically requirements to be one of their followers. And Jesus says, I want you to know, my yoke, my requirements are easy. They are gentle and humble. Now, when he says that, what he's not saying is you have to do nothing in order to follow me. In fact, Matthew, Jesus' disciple, who writes these words for us in Matthew chapter 11, just a couple chapters earlier, records for us what we know of as the Sermon on the Mount. This is Jesus' like comprehensive, here's how you connect to God kind of teaching. And in there, Jesus lays out some pretty tough stuff for us to follow. What Jesus is not saying here is, hey, nothing is required for you to follow me. What Jesus is saying is, guys, my attitude is not to harass and harangue you with more religious rules and commands. In fact, the way I want to direct you toward God is in a way that is gentle and humble. In a way that you experience and know is for your benefit and for your good. In a way that leads you to find rest for your soul. When you and I follow Jesus and we find it to be something other than restful, something that maybe even we might say feels a little oppressive, oftentimes what that means is we are actually out of alignment and out of step with the very God who calls us to follow him. Now, you would think that Jesus' disciples would be able to put all this together, right? They hung out with Jesus all the time. They've heard his teaching, all this kind of stuff. But Luke, another first century follower of Jesus, records this for us. He records a story where he says people were bringing babies to Jesus for him to place his hands on them. And when the disciples saw this, they rebuked them, right? They started acting like the Secret Service. I said, hang on there a minute, ma'am. Hang on, sir. Jesus is a little too busy. He's doing some savior of the world stuff. He doesn't have time for you and for your kid. And Luke tells us that Jesus called the children to him. In other words, he took initiative to make sure that they were brought over to him. And he said, let the little children come to me and do not hinder them because the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. Truly, I tell you, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it. Guys, you think that you have something to teach these kids? I'm here to announce something different to you. They actually have something to teach you. And there are probably a number of different things we could extrapolate from this, but for the purposes of our discussion today, I just want to note two things. Number one, kids have this uncanny ability to turn anything into a game. Have you ever noticed that? Last weekend, we were here and we were rehearsing beforehand our worship team. And Liz, one of the singers on our team, had her kids with her, and her kids had made a game into basically seeing how many times they could run out that exit right here and through that entrance over there, literally just making a circle around the theater right here. And I know for me, anytime physical fitness becomes a game, that is no longer a game. That is exercise, and that is by definition not play. It is not fun. But they were loving it, okay? How many of you have ever played the game, The Floor is Lava? Yeah, exactly. Many of you, right? I guarantee you that was a game created by a kid, right? Who else would come up with this idea of, oh, the floor is lava and we need to throw down all of our pillows and avoid getting burned up, you know, because these pillows are obviously going to be able to survive lava, right? Like that is a game that is obviously created by a kid. Because kids have this uncanny ability just to turn anything they encounter into a game. And part of the reason is the second thing. Kids have this uncanny sense of trust in the people who take care of them. There are a lot of cynical people in this world, and I've met a lot of them. I've been a cynical person and can be a cynical person from time to time. But what I know is I haven't met a cynical four-year-old. Now, maybe I haven't met your four-year-old, but kids just kind of have this genuine thing of whether it's mom or dad or grandma and grandpa or aunt or uncle, whoever it is that's kind of in charge of them. They just have this uncanny trust. Like, if mom and dad's around, everything's going to be okay. I don't need to be worried. I can be confident that my needs are going to be provided for and taken care of. I don't need to be concerned. I don't need to worry. I can actually have a little bit of margin in which I play. Three quick things, then we'll be done here today. Play honors God because it expresses our confidence in Him to provide. Play is a way in which we say to God, God, I actually believe that even if I can't do every single thing that I want to do right now or feel like I need to do right now in order to survive or make it through or achieve my goals and dreams, God, I trust that you're big enough and great enough and powerful enough to provide in the margin, that you're going to be able to take care of things anyway. One of the interesting things is when God created the world and when he kind of created this framework for how we follow him, he instituted this thing called the tithe. And it's the idea that the first 10% of what comes in, our resources, goes back to God. And that's kind of scary. And, you know, I know even for us today, right, the idea of giving away 10% of my money to God is like, ooh, I'm not really sure I'm up for that, right? But what I would argue to you is your money is not the most valuable resource that you own. It's your time. Because as generous or scarce as you feel like the money is in your life right now, what I feel pretty confident of is I'm going to get more money at some point in my life, but I'm not going to get more time. Right? When your 20s are gone, you don't get a redo. When the first 6 years of your kid's life are over, you don't get to try that again. You know, time is a commodity we all get in an equal amount. And we can never get back once it's gone. And what's kind of crazy is with this play idea, with this Sabbath idea, God is saying not just 1/10, actually 1/7 of everything that you have, I'm asking you to entrust to me. Second thing is playing well requires hustle on the other days. Play is not a license for us to be irresponsible. The Bible, God speaks many times about the value of hard work that honors him. It honors the people around us. It's actually a way in which we love others is by working hard. This is not an excuse for us to just kind of do shoddy, half-hearted stuff 6 days of the week and then go, okay, God, clean up my mess on day 7, right? That's not how this works, right? Play means that we're going to hustle hard in the other 6 days to achieve and accomplish what it is that we've been called to achieve and accomplish. We don't just simply put God to the test by hoping he'll clean up the gaps for us. Third thing, play is rooted in a rhythm of worship. The ancient Jews, when they would spend their Sabbath day, it was rooted around the idea of them going to the synagogue or going to the temple. And this is a really big deal for them. This is something that was like the hallmark of this day. What I'm not trying to say to you is you need to make Sunday your Sabbath. What I am trying to say to you is at some point when I play, I need to be able to step back and worship. To step back and go, wow, God. Man, thanks. Like, this is so cool to me that you have actually programmed and wired me to enjoy enjoyment. And you have actually created a world with, like, frivolous enjoyment kind of things that we don't need, but that we get to have to, like, make life better. That's really cool. Thank you, God. That's what it looks like to root our Sabbath in a rhythm of worship. As we finish up today, as you walk out at each of our three exits, we got a couple tables set up. And in there, they have one of these decks of cards, these strong challenge cards. And, you know, this is something you'll use throughout the series. These decks are divided into five different suits, one for each week of this message series. And here's all I'm going to ask you to do is every day this week, actually not every day, five out of the next 7 days, so before we come back again next Sunday, I want you to sit down, you know, take some time in the morning or lunch break or before you go to bed, however that works for you. And I want you to deal out to yourself all of these play cards. And you can deal them out face down if you feel like you're a risk taker. You can deal them face up if you're a control freak, okay? You do you, girl, you know? And I'm just going to ask you to pick one each day. And each of these cards has a little challenge on it for you to do. It'll take you about 15 minutes. Some you'll do right there. Some you'll do throughout the course of your day. And when you finish the challenge, I just want you to write down a couple sentences about your experience with it. What did I like about it? What did I not like about it? What did I learn? Was there something interesting I discovered? You can write down, you can have a physical notebook, you can make a note in your phone, you can use Evernote, you can email yourself, do whatever you got to do. But our hope is, as you engage with these over the next 5 days, you get 2 days as a freebie, okay, that you would engage with some practices to help you grow spiritually strong. That you would get a chance to encounter the God who created play and to encounter part of this little thing that we can do to grow spiritually strong. Being strong is not easy, but it is simple. It just requires us to have the discipline to say each day, God, I'm going to place my life before you, and I'm going to choose to engage and interact with something that makes me strong. Crossbridge, you can do this, and I guarantee you it can and will make a difference. Let's be strong together.